Ben Wilder, aka Ann Amelia, here. This is the Thoughts and Thrillers, the podcast, back after a long, long hiatus of over a year. We're back with episode 2 of Wave 1. This one will be covering Michael Crichton's second book, Scratch One, also written under the pseudonym John Lang. My dad is joining us again. Say hi.
This is Joe Wilder. Hi again.
Anyways, the two things you should know. First off, one, Scratch One is generally a lot less expensive than Odds On. When you still have to search online for it because it is out of print. And two, it's also been toned down a lot. So if the idea of the raunchy content in the first one kept you away, you don't have to worry about this. About it. In this one, Roger Carr, an attorney on business in Nice, France, gets mistaken for an assassin that was going to be sent by the CIA in order to break up a sort of, I don't know, is cartel the right word? Well, anyways, a group of gangsters of sorts called the Associates who are trying to stop an undercover arms shipment. And Carr gets caught in the middle of this. For the longest time, he has no idea what's going on. People are coming up to him, calling him by a name that's not him. All sorts of weird things are happening to him, and he has no clue whatsoever what's going on, because it's a case of mistaken identity. None of these, isn't who any of these people think he is. By the time things start to become clearer, he's in it up to his head, but he's reluctant to back out completely because he's fallen in love with a woman. You take it from here, Dad.
Well, the woman,
Anne.
Yeah. Is the love interest in the story, which takes a couple twists.
Because we find out the head of the Associates, Georges Lassue, is sort of keeping her because they were romantically involved a while ago. Afterwards, they may not be romantically involved anymore, she's too terrified to leave him. And while she tries to warn Carr off when he drops her off at his place, he doesn't figure it out and ends up being interrogated by the Associates. Luckily, they're able to figure out what they need to know without hurting him. However, it takes another twist again after they both realize that Lassue might let him go free. He wouldn't let him take Anne with her, and at that point, he's madly in love with her, and vice versa. So he attempts to try and gather information and then break out to try to escape so that he can get to the police or whatever. He can get them to come back and help him rescue her. Unfortunately for him, he was spying, he was discovered, and it's only by, and they planned it, and he only, by a twist of fate, lucks out and he escapes, because they planned to execute him by making it look like he had gone off the road while driving, when in fact they kind of forced him off the road. He however figured manages to get out, he figures it out, and then when his car is behind a blind spot, he stops, spins it to the side, and jumps out of the car right before the car that was chasing him comes behind him, plows into him, and they die. Because of this, he was able to escape well enough, but unfortunately, the Associates have already moved on. Or figured it out. They've moved away from the mansions. So what follows is a sort of chase-esque scene. It's not a chase in the traditional sense. More like a kind of detective thing where he, with the help of the police and the consulate, are trying to track down Lassue of the Associates before they can make their getaway in order to rescue Anne. The final climax is where he figures out where Lassue's hiding and goes there to confront him before he can kill her. And it generates into a fight. I think the fight was really well orchestrated. Do you have anything you want to add, Dad?
No, it was a was interesting.
Yeah, because they start with, like, gunshots being traded back and forth, but then they both... LeSue gets the drop on Carr, unfortunately. Too bad, unfortunately for him, he's out of bullets and he hasn't realized it. So Carr tries to turn the tables, only he's out of bullets, too. After that, it sort of rolls into a brawl. LeSue, being a surgeon, professionally anyways, he takes a scalpel and tries to crash with him. But through a series of... Well, I don't want to go into too much detail, but in the end, Carr manages to use chairs and other stuff to hold him at bay. Because he is not a professional fighter at all. When you get to... fighter at all, but... LeSue isn't either, but we'll get back to that. Anyways, you can probably guess how it's going to end, but I won't. I'll leave out the final climax anyways, just on the off chance.
Well, I thought it was an interesting story. It reminded me many ways of the movie North by Northwest.
Who's that by?
Alfred Hitchcock thriller. And again, it's a case of mistaken identity. And I think North by Northwest came out in the either late 50s or early 60s, probably late 50s. And this book, I think, was written in the early 60s.
It was published in the 60s, I know that much.
Right, so there's a certain amount of it that seems to come from there.
You might be onto something. I do know, in general, he based his books on his early pen name, John Lang books, on the James Bond stuff, because they were popular, and back then he was writing not as a profession solely, but to pay his way through medical school. So there are elements of that there. And one thing I like to set out, the difference in the two main villains or antagonists, LeSue and the hired gun, Brower. Brower is basically an assassin, but in his own way, he's a more likable character, as it's described. He may be willing to kill if he's paid long enough, but he will not prolong the pain for anyone. He won't torture him. It makes him sick, whereas LeSue, while he may not do active killings, gets off on the torture. He's a real sadist. So that way, kind of ironic, you really... Brower, while you may not like him, you don't exactly hate him either, whereas LeSue is only too easy to hate.
I agree. He's an evil character.
Yeah. But he does have a lot of charisma in a weird sort of way, as indicated by both ways he leads the associates, and that in his public life he's a well-renowned surgeon. Ironically, it's that same detailed attention to the surgeon that makes him such a good torturer, or when he puts his mind to it, which some of the things he does or threatens to do, they're sick just to think about, which is probably good that he never describes it too much, because the details you do get are bad enough. Any other thoughts, Dad?
No, it was a good book, and actually it could be a quick read, except that we spread it over the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And, that's my fault.
Yeah. To top it all off, we had read it once before the podcast was going to come out a while later, but we delayed recording so much that we had to start the book over from scratch in order to keep our memory fresh, which is why this episode has been over a year and a half in coming.
Is that why they called it Scratch 1?
No, I think there's a line in there called Scratch 1, Nice Confused American.
All right.
Oh, I get it. Sorry, it was a little slow to the punchline. Anyways, that's it for this episode. Take care and see. Hopefully we'll see you again. Bye.
The foulest stenches in the air. The funk of 40,000 years. And grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no immortal can resist the evil of the thriller.